You're listening to Explore by the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWaka. Flexible loans built for small businesses. iwoca.co.uk.
Welcome to Explore. I'm Lionel Burney and I'm with Hannah Troop again. Hello, Hannah.
Hello, Lionel.
How are you doing? Have you been adventuring, exploring, riding your bike?
I have actually. This week, Ollie and I set off mountain chasing again, but one a lot closer to home this time. There's on a morning ride loop that I do, you can look across and on the horizon, you can see this mountain called Montserrat. And it's one of those mountains that's been like quite magical for me. Like I see it and I'm like, God, I want to go to that mountain so much and ride over to it and everything. And I've been thinking that for like the last 4 years. And then finally this week, on a very cold Tuesday, the temperature has dropped quite significantly in Barcelona. We set off on like a 150K ride nearly. And we got to the top of the mountain and it was absolutely spectacular. It did not disappoint at all.
Excellent. So you're riding and mountain hunting with Ollie becoming a regular thing, Hannah, because last month's episode of Explore, we heard your adventure to Mont Ventoux, your long-awaited adventure to Mont Ventoux. We've had some lovely feedback about that episode, which featured not only your ride, but Richard Moore's ride, Ian Boswell, and also Felicity Cloak. And it was a sort of a celebratory mashup of people getting out on their bikes and exploring, in some cases, not terribly far from home. Richard rode out and back from his new base in northern France. But I was really pleased that episode seemed to go down well with people.
Yeah, I know. I've had some really lovely comments back on Twitter and on Instagram. And yeah, it was really nice and it felt good to feel that you've kind of inspired people to start and think about planning adventures for next year as well, which was exactly what we wanted, wasn't it, really?
Absolutely. Well, we're a couple of weeks away from Christmas at the moment, and I've got a ride in my sights, which something that was a bit of a tradition. We used to do a sort of 4-hour-ish ride. We called it the 12 Hills of Christmas, and it's just crisscrosses a couple of ridges of hills not too far from my home here in Hertfordshire on the edge of the Chilterns. A couple of hills that people around here would know reasonably well, Ivinghoe Beacon being one, and the other is Bison Hill, at the top of which is Whipsnade Zoo. What I love about this ride, the 12 Hills of Christmas, is that we don't go terribly far from home. As the crow flies, the furthest point is probably only about 15 kilometres away from the start. So it feels like a little homegrown Tour of Flanders, crossing back and forth, riding one side of a hill and then looping round and coming back over the other side of the hill. But this year, I'm going to split it into two days, mainly because there'll be nowhere to go and have lunch, because we won't be able to go indoors and have lunch, as we're not all from the same household under tier 2 restrictions. So we're going to split it into two rides on consecutive days, the Six Hills of Christmas one day and the Six Hills of Christmas the next day, just looking out for a day when it's dry and not too cold. So a bit of a Christmas tradition. May have a little sherry when I arrive back home at the end of day two.
That sounds absolutely amazing. I think, I actually took a good tip from a friend about winter riding just recently. I'm going to give him a shout out. So my friend Matt Charlton, he said to me, and I did it this week for the first time, we went out for the ride on Tuesday. So we are actually allowed to stop in restaurants and cafes and everything now with our restrictions. And so what I did was I have a little handlebar bag and I took with me a spare base layer and jersey. So then when I got into the cafe, I changed into this dry jersey and base layer, because obviously you kind of sweat up under your winter jackets after especially doing a 10-kilometer climb up a mountain. And I changed into it. I have never been so warm and snug leaving a cafe to go and descend down a mountain on a winter's day as I was the other day. It was the best advice that I've ever taken. It absolute game changer.
That is a game changer, because there's nothing more uncomfortable, is there, on a cold winter ride than that moment after you've had a lovely snug half hour, but you're sort of damp and soggy after this cafe stop. And as soon as you get back out in the cold air again, all of that moisture makes you jolly chilly. So, no, what a good idea. Unfortunately, we can't go into anywhere at the moment to change. So, not sure whether that particular tip will help me too much. But
one day you will be able to again. One day.
One day. Well, before we crack on with this month's episode of Explore, I just need to let everybody know that Explore is supported by iWocca, as is the whole of the Cycling Podcast family. iWocca are in the business of making borrowing money for your small or medium-sized business easier. They are also accredited to give coronavirus business interruption loans. And if you want to find out more about that, go to iwocca.co.uk. That's iwocca.co.uk. Now, Hannah, this month's episode of Explore is a real blast of nostalgia for me because it features Timmy Mallett. Do you know who Timmy Mallett is?
I do. And it's I'm looking forward to listen to this one because I'm sure it will bring a lot of nostalgia back for me as well.
Well, Timmy Mallett has a kind of cult status here in the UK. People outside the UK may not know who he is, but I don't think that would detract from this conversation I had with him because he's a really upbeat character with a really nice story to tell. For those who don't know, he was a very well-known children's TV presenter in the late 1980s and 1990s and famous for, Hannah,
Whack-a-day
and Mallett's Mallet. Now, Mallett's Mallet is a big foam mallet which he used to adjudicate in a word game between children on the children's TV show. Basically, a word game where hesitation or repetition was not allowed. And if anyone did hesitate or repeat a word in the back and forth game, they got a whack on the head from Timmy Mallett's foam mallet. Anyway, he's an artist these days and also a very keen cyclist. And a couple of years ago, he rode from his home in the south of England to Santiago de Compostela, the famous pilgrimage route down through France and across northern Spain, of course. It was a ride that he did in memory of his brother Martin, who had Down syndrome and who had just passed away very shortly before Timmy set off on his ride. He's written a book about it called Utterly Brilliant, which is a really nice read. And during lockdown earlier this year, I caught up with him on the phone. He was just getting back out on his bike again, able to explore a little bit further from home as the lockdown restrictions eased. So without further ado, let's hear Timmy Mallett's story. You were a big part of my childhood with Whack-a-Day and the Wide Awake Club and all of that. And I guess from our demographic, certainly the UK listeners, they'll be very familiar with those days. But perhaps for those listeners who aren't in the UK, maybe you can just explain a little bit about who you are and how you were such a large part of, well, anyone, I would guess, between around about mid to late 30s to mid to late 40s, really. You're a part of our childhood.
Well, it's very kind of you to say, Lionel, and I appreciate that very much. And it's lovely what you've just said there. That's a very kind thing to say. Look, this is all part and parcel, I suppose, of what I do. You know, life doesn't always go exactly linear or all the way through as one might plan. I think when opportunity comes knocking, it's quite intriguing to see, to answer the door and see where it leads. So, you know, I started out in radio as a DJ, which led to TV, to the Wide Awake Club and Whack-a-Day and Breakfast TV. And that led to doing stage shows. And lo and behold, a record with Andrew Lloyd Webber, which went to number one 30 years ago. And from that, I've gone into doing performances and touring. But in amongst all of that has been my interest in history, art, and exploring and telling stories. And all of those things are interwoven, if you like, in what I do now, which is cycle, paint, and tell stories.
The most famous thing for children in the 80s and early 90s was Mallet's Mallet, of course. Basically a word association game in which you mustn't pause, mustn't hesitate, and if either of the contestants, who would have been children, sitting on stools opposite one another, real high-pressure scenario for them, because you were hovering with your big foam mallet, Mallet's Mallet, to give them a whack on the head if they paused or hesitated, but basically a word association game. So if I kick you off and say bike...
Oh, nice one. Puncture.
I thought you were more optimistic than that. I was going to say puncture.
I am, but that's a very good idea. You know, Mallet's Mallet's a word association game where you mustn't pause or hesitate, repeat a word or say a word I don't like, otherwise you get bashed in the head like this or like this, and it's one of the most bruises, look at each other and go blah.
Wow.
Would be the explanation of the rules in the long format.
Excellent. Excellent. Great. Well, that's a little slice of my childhood just come back to me. Let's
thank you.
Think about that. No, thank you. Let's think about the cycling, and you've mentioned now that you cycle and you paint, but where did the cycling start for you?
Oh, I've always loved cycling. I think, you know, as a kid, I would get on my bike and go off and explore. And my dad would encourage me to do that, and my big brother too. And it was always good fun going off on the bikes. I wonder where that lane leads to. I wonder what there is down there. I think that's inherent in lots of us, actually, that sense of, ooh, wonder at what you can discover. And it's my preferred way of getting around, I think, on the bike. So I'll go anywhere and everywhere on the bike. Last week, for instance, I took the bike down to Somerset. Now, this is interesting at the moment when you travel by train, because, you know, they're trying to keep us off the railways in some way. The trains are empty. And you wear your face covering, you sit by the window, not in the aisle, and it's two or three people per carriage. And off I went down to Bridgewater, and it was lovely. I got off the train at Bridgewater. I was the only one getting off, and there was a chappy selling tickets with no customers. So I engaged him in conversation about a place for a cuppa, because there's no refreshments on the train at the moment. And then set off exploring the Somerset Levels. I went off to go and look at the Battle of Sedgemoor, the last battle on English soil in 1685. And remarkably, the scene doesn't look a lot different to how it would have looked 340 years ago. It's pretty similar. And then I went off to a little village called Sutton Mallet, which has a family connection because this was owned by an ancestor of mine, William Mallet, and he's one of the barons who brought King John to account at Runnymede in 1215 with the Magna Carta. 25 barons, and there's young William Mallet, who's rather insignificant in the sense that he's not a big landowner, but he owns parts of Somerset. And so I went to see the village in which he had lived, and it was really interesting to think, oh, these connections link you to the past through 600, 700, 800 years. And I cycled across Somerset Levels and around the Mendips on something called the Strawberry Line, which sounds very appealing. It's where they used to ship the strawberries grown on the south-facing slopes of the Mendips to Bristol and into the Midlands. And so I cycled around there and up to Cadbury Camp Lane, the old Roman site just outside of Nailsley. Yeah, I ended up doing about 50 miles, and it was really interesting and stimulating and different to what I was expecting.
And this was a solo ride? You just took yourself off and explored the countryside?
It ended up being solo. Well, I was going to go with a pal who has been on and on at me. He lives near Nailsley, and he said, oh, come on, let's do this ride. So we had it planned for Thursday, and then it was lashing with rain, and I thought, you know what, I'd rather go on Friday in the sunshine. So I put it off, and he couldn't, so I went on my own. I thought, okay, next time.
So back when you were growing up and just discovering the bike, were you in Cheshire at that point?
Yeah, born and brought up in Marple, on the outskirts of Greater Manchester, in the panhandle of Cheshire, as it were. And there's some really nice cycle rides along the Peak Forest Canal. And there's lots of places to explore. If you go northwards, you end up heading towards Tameside and in among the factories. You go south and you end up in Whaley Bridge or along to Macclesfield. Really lovely, lovely rides. I've done them again recently, and they're so different now. You know, 50 years later, you look at them, you go, oh, that changed a bit, because of course it was all so much more industrial in the olden days when Britain made things. Now industrial heritage is either swept away or you've got to find it, you've got to discover it. But it's quite interesting seeing how things evolve. Nothing lasts forever. And that's why I'm really keen to stop and explore. Because when you're cycling somewhere, often, you know, you might see a great view and you think, oh, I'd like to stop, but I've got the momentum going. And, you know, I'll wait till the next time. Well, I don't do that anymore. I always, always stop. So in many ways, weirdly, my cycle rides are about stopping. Not about how fast you can go or how far. It's how much fun and how much stimulation you have along the way. So if you come around the corner and you see something that looks like it could be a painting or a drawing or a subject of interest, I'll stop. I'll take a photo, do a sketch, maybe even set up the paints on the back of the bike and actually paint it. I make sure I do that because I'm always aware that you may never do this route again. So fill every day and every journey and every little adventure that you do. This became really, really clear to me when I was cycling and painting on my own across Europe on the Camino de Santiago. Do you know what that is, Lionel?
Well, I do, yeah, because it's a very famous pilgrimage route, isn't it, to Santiago de Compostela in Galicia in northern Spain. But I must confess, I'm not really that au fait with the whole history and symbolism and importance of it. Although I picked up a bit from reading the opening couple of chapters of your book, Utterly Brilliant, which your publisher very kindly sent me a copy of. So yeah, I was going to get round to that, asking how you go from, you know, getting on the train and exploring a little bit around the UK to undertaking a ride across half the continent.
Yeah, I'd done short bits of the Camino about 8 or 9 years ago with my pal. It was one of these holiday companies who, you know, you say, right, I've got a week's cycling to be done. Okay, I'll fly somewhere, pick up a bike, and they say, how far do you want to cycle? You say, and they arrange the accommodation. They even take your bags on for you. And that just gave me the bug for this, that it's so intriguing and so different. And at the end of it, my pal Gary said, next time, you know, we should do the whole thing. We should cycle the whole route. And by that, he meant from the Pyrenees to Santiago. But for me, it meant from home, because this is an old ancient pilgrimage route which has been around for 1,000 years. And if you go back to the age of Chaucer, when he's writing the Canterbury Tales about that odd group of pilgrims making their way to Canterbury, well, around that time there would be 250,000 people a year making their way, mostly on foot, from wherever they lived in Europe to Santiago and then home again. And you go, 250,000 people, that's a sizable number of the population. And that tells you that people have always had an inherent interest in exploring and discovering something. And I really like the idea of setting off from home and making my way there and back, but not on foot, but on my bike. Because on a bike, you can carry your stuff, and it's a little easier than you know, traipsing around with a great big backpack on. I mean, you put a couple of panniers on the back of the bike and there's your change of clothes and your wet weather gear and the stuff that you may need for 2 months. And on top of that, I'll put my painting gear. And I set off in springtime in 2018, thinking spring will be lovely and it'll be gorgeous and new and colourful. And I just got the beast from the east and lashing rain and storms and stuff and thinking, wow. Well, it just reminds you, I suppose, that these adventures are not jollies. They're not really the things that you do thinking, oh, this is going to be a holiday. It's an adventure. It's about putting yourself out there and testing yourself. You'll know from cycling that all cycling trips test you because you'll come to the hills, you'll come to the difficult parts, the busy road junctions, and you go, right, okay, how am I going to get on here? And there's no idea what the weather's going to do. So how do you make the most of it? Right. You put yourself in the right mindset, which is I'm going to experience this and see what I can make from it.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour at the Tour de France, of course, interrupting my conversation with Timmy Mallett to remind me to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Stitch Fix. All of our shopping habits have changed this year, and Stitch Fix is a personal stylist that makes clothes shopping easier. So easy, in fact, you don't even need to leave the house. To get started, go to stitchfix.co.uk/cycling and set up your profile. To begin with, you give Stitch Fix an idea of the sort of things you like, and they will then deliver a collection of clothes chosen just for you, selecting the colours and styles that you like and keeping within your budget. You pay a £10 styling fee for each fix, which is credited towards anything you choose to keep. You can schedule a delivery when you want, and shipping, returns and exchanges are easy and free. Now, I found the best thing about Stitch Fix is that they seem to know exactly how the different brands measure up against each other, and so when the clothes arrive, they always fit. You can pick and choose the ones that you want to keep and send back the others. And over the year or so that I've been using Stitch Fix, I've added some interesting stuff to my wardrobe. And like I say, I'm not one who enjoys going out clothes shopping at the best of times, but during recent months it's been impossible to do so. So online shopping has really come into its own, and Stitch Fix is the perfect solution. So get started today at stitchfix.co.uk/cycling. Do use the word cycling when you go to the website, because you'll be supporting the podcast as you do so. That's stitchfix.co.uk/cycling.
I found it profoundly exciting that I never planned where I was going to stay. So mostly you, if you're with somebody else, you'll always plan it much more. But on your own, you do it differently. So I wake up in the morning, I don't know what I'm going to eat, who I'm going to meet, where I'm going to stay tonight, even which way I'm going to go at the crossroads. So every decision is a decision, and each day you go, I'll set off in this direction and see what happens. If you're hungry, you go to your fridge, and if you're tired, you go to your bed. Not on this adventure, you don't. This adventure, you see where the road takes you, and I found it really invigorating and liberating.
Now, you rode this ride, which was around about, well, there and back must have been nearly 4,000 kilometres, I guess.
It's the equivalent of Land's End to John O'Groats, back to Land's End, turn around and go up to Scotland again.
Well, it's longer than the Tour de France as well, which is, you know, obviously the epic bike race. You rode an e-bike. I mean, talk me through that and how that came about, because obviously when you started cycling, such technology didn't exist. But as technology has improved, e-bikes seem to me to be opening the world up to adventure and exploration on two wheels, you know, to an extent that we couldn't really have imagined 20 years ago.
Oh, without a doubt, they've transformed cycling, and it's a game changer. People feel quite snobbish about cycles and the sort of bikes you have. But, you know, how many bikes have you got, Lionel? You'll have a road bike, you'll have a hybrid, you'll have a mountain bike, you'll have... What else have you got?
Well, I've got a track bike, I've got a fixed gear bike as well, yeah. An e-bike is, well, it's all of those things, isn't it? It's versatile, it can cope with terrain, it can carry you further than perhaps your own legs can, just unassisted. I mean, it seems to me it puts within reach of a lot more people, a lot more of this kind of cycling.
A lot more. And the Europeans have embraced e-bikes in a way that... Britain is a little slower to do. It's getting there. In fact, during lockdown, I was talking to a pal who runs a bike shop, and he said, we've never been busier. He said, and it's e-bikes that people want because they want to feel comfortable. And for me, it made it a lot easier to stop and to explore. You know, I talk about stopping as an important part of cycling. I think it's really lovely to be able to do that, to be able to engage in conversation with people, to be able to look at what you're looking at, and then to get the momentum going again. It's easy. It's a doddle. And I really, really liked it. So on that e-bike, I had two panniers carrying, 9 kilos of stuff? Oh, hang on. Then there's the battery. That's another, the charger. And then my painting gear. So roughly about 25 kilos is on the back of the bike. And then there's me. So the bike's got to carry quite a bit of weight, plus the weight of the bike itself. And with an e-bike, it just makes it easier. You do have to pedal, by the way. You know, it's not a motorbike. It's not putting on a motor and letting the motor do all the work. No, you've got to pedal. You just get more for your pedal. That's all.
And it gives you that just that little bit of assistance when you're going up hills and lets gravity take over. And lets once it's reached a certain speed, it kind of, trips out again and kicks back in again.
It's something quite small. I mean, it gives you help up to about sort of the 14 miles an hour or something. It's not to get you whazzing along at a million miles an hour. That's not it. No, that's your road bike. You head down and drop handlebars and away you go.
Absolutely.
You know, and your speedy tires that the width of a pencil.
I was going to ask whether had you ever taken an interest in cycle racing back in the day? You know, the Milk Race, the Tour de France, that kind of thing. Was it something that crossed your field of vision, so to speak?
Yeah, I've seen it, and I saw the way they did the tour in Yorkshire a couple of years ago, and lovely. I love those big yellow bikes on put on buildings all over Yorkshire. Absolutely amazing. I think that's terrific. And I found myself between Sheffield and the Peak District last year on the bike, and they were showing me some hill there that they race up every year. The idea is it's a time trial race, and it's really, really steep. I don't know, is it a mile or more or something? And they're racing up this in 2 minutes. It's like, what? How do you do that? That's incredible. Wow, I am impressed with the way people race on those bikes. I think it's lovely.
That's hill climbing, which is, I won't say uniquely British, but it's a sort of an eccentric British branch of cycle racing, really.
It means, I'm surprised it's not in Cornwall, because the Cornish Hills are among the toughest hills I've ever seen anywhere. Have you cycled in Cornwall?
I have a little bit, yes. And it's either up or it's down, it seems to me.
Other hills meander, don't they? You know, in other parts of the country, there'll be a meandering way up a hill. But in Cornwall, it's straight up. They're vertical. And whoa, it's challenging. If you're doing the Land's End to John O'Groats, it's a mind-boggling start to the ride, or a terrifying end.
Indeed. Well, back to the Camino de Santiago. Just explain to me the origins of this idea. What sparked it in the first place? And what did those close to you say when you said, I'm going to recycle to northern Spain and back?
Well, my family weren't that happy with the idea, doing it all in one go. I remember Mrs. Mallett saying, well, why don't you do it in bits? Why don't you do it in September when the weather's nicer? Why don't you do, in many ways, why don't you do anything but this? So it took a little while for her to get used to it, and she watched me training over the winter, because I did quite a lot of training, and all my training was done on a normal sort of a road bike or a hybrid. It was only about a month or so before I set off that I made that decision, now I'll try and bike. And she saw me doing the training and said, oh, okay. And then kept asking questions. How are you going to paint? How are you going to do that? I said, well, if I can do it in winter, I can do it in spring. But I liked the idea of the following in the footsteps of people who've done this journey for 1,000 years. Back in those ancient times, you couldn't do it without the permission of your parish priest and your lord of the manor. Because have you got your will in order, you know? Are your family happy with it? Have you paid your bills? Are you running away from something? People would go for a variety of reasons, you know, maybe for hoping for a miraculous cure for their cancer or something. Look, I don't have any health issues, and I really like the idea of setting off with some permissions, actually. So I got the blessing of the bishop and a pat on the back from my lord of the manor, who would be Prince William, because I live in the royal borough. He wrote a nice letter saying, good luck, you know, you must be nuts. And then my MP said, yeah, I'll come to your house. And she was prime minister at the time, trying to jiggle Brexit. And she took time out to come and hear about the Camino and about my reasons for doing it, which is inspired by my brother. I've got two older brothers. Paul's the eldest and Martin's the middle brother. Martin, with Down syndrome, language and learning difficulties, manages always to reach his potential just by being involved in the here and now of living. And I found that really inspirational. I was thinking about this as I was making my plans, and I was telling people about, this is not about being the best in the world at something. It's about being the best that I can be and having a go. And when I told Theresa May about this, she said, yeah, I know about your brother, and we just have to be the best that we can be. And that's such a liberating thing. Martin and I would cycle together a lot as youngsters. We were always out on our bikes. And if I said, should we go for a bike ride? He'd say, yeah, you and me. And it has a way of engaging in the here and now of living, the moment. And I find this really inspirational. I love the fact that that it's about reaching your potential. It's not about being the best cyclist or the best anything. It's just about being the best that you can be, like my brother Martin. And then the dementia started making life quite tricky for my brother. It's a wretched disease, awful. And a week before I set off, dear Martin died. But not before I'd talked to him about my journey. I'd said, look, I'm going to do this cycle ride, this big cycle ride. Yeah, bye. You and me, he said. And it was such a lovely thing to say. I knew then that I was going to be carrying Martin in my heart on this journey. And at his funeral in Aberdeen, 2 days before I set off, my big brother Paul had been going through Martin's things and said, these are his name tags. You know those things that your mum sews into your clothes to make sure that they're yours? It's a way of identifying what is yours. Well, I had this bundle of Martin Mallett name tags, and Paul said, you might, you know, use them or take them with you. And this little idea started forming in my mind about using the name tags to mark my journey and to remind me each day the importance of reaching your potential. Make sure that you see and experience everything that you can today. And that, you know, I think about the importance of loved ones, family, friends. And so I did. I used the name tags to mark the way. So there'd be a wayside memorial, a great view, maybe in a vineyard, maybe in a church or a castle, or maybe somebody I'd meet along the way and tell them about my brother, and I'd leave a name tag. So Martin's name tags are all across Europe. And in my book, there's a map showing the exact location of each one, the GPS, and the What Three Words code, so you can use the What Three Words app to identify which side of the road, where exactly is this name tag. And I find that lovely, so that it means that you can follow the journey either in person or from the comfort of your sofa in your lounge. But Martin's presence with me was a great source of encouragement in difficult, challenging conditions.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast Team Car, the back of the pack, please.
Thanks again, Seb, for reminding me to tell you that this episode of Explore is sponsored by HelloFresh. And you can get 50% off your first HelloFresh box and 35% off the next three with the code cycling at hellofresh.co.uk. As I said earlier, all of our shopping habits have changed this year, including the supermarket shop. A lot more of us are doing our grocery shopping online. And if we're getting our groceries delivered to the door, why not go that one step further and give HelloFresh a try? Because HelloFresh can deliver you a box of fresh seasonal ingredients so that you can make delicious dinners from scratch in your kitchen at home without having to go around the supermarket picking the individual ingredients off the shelf. You simply follow the step-by-step recipe cards and you can have the meal on the table in 20 or so minutes. Some of the recipes do take a little bit longer, but a lot of them are 20 to 30 minutes and you're done from start to finish. One of the things that I've really liked about HelloFresh in the time that I've been using them, which is well over a year now, is that there's always something new to choose from, because the menus switch around so frequently. Every week there's at least 30 to choose from, and so you never feel like you're getting stuck in a rut. And because everything arrives portioned up, ready to cook, it gives you that license to kind of choose things that you perhaps wouldn't ordinarily make for yourself if you were having to go out and buy all of the ingredients. One case in point, hoisin chicken stir fry, which we had recently, not necessarily something that I would make at home, partly because we wouldn't have Chinese five spice or a jar of hoisin sauce just hanging around in the cupboard. And so the fact that everything arrives in the box in exactly the quantity that you need is really appealing. And it means that you can broaden your horizons a bit when it comes to what you have for dinner. So if you want to give HelloFresh a try, go to hellofresh.co.uk and use the code CYCLING to get 50% off your first box and 35% off the next three. That's hellofresh.co.uk with the code CYCLING.
So tell me, roughly speaking, what your route from home and down through France was.
Okay, so I set out from home, and my first decision was at the end of my driveway. Do I go left or right? And in a sense, it didn't matter because I was heading for Portsmouth. I cycled from my home near Maidenhead down through Basingstoke, Winchester, and then to Portsmouth. I crossed over on the ferry to San Marlo. And went to Mont Saint-Michel, which is one of the World Heritage Sites of Europe. And I followed a route called the Way of the Plantagenets, which was a great inspiration to me because I love my history. And I followed that route down through the Loire Valley to Poitiers, my twin town, and then down through Saintes and Bordeaux to the Pyrenees, one of the great mountain ranges of Europe. Of the world, and cycled over the Pyrenees. That was something else. In the lashing rain and snow on the peaks, it's like, ooh, missus, this is something else.
Do you remember which passes you went over in the Pyrenees?
Yeah, I went over from Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port up to Roncesvalles, which is on the way to Pamplona. And I cycled down into Pamplona, where Hemingway wrote about the running of the bulls. And then across through northern Spain. It's called the Camino Frances, the French Camino, and it goes from Pamplona to Logroño, capital of Rioja, and into Burgos, the great Castilian capital, and then to León, and on into Galicia to Santiago de Compostela. And I didn't stop there. I went on to the coast to Finisterre, to the end of the earth, and then turned around and headed back a different route called the Camino Primitivo over the mountains towards Oviedo and Santander. And at Santander, I picked up the boat and sailed back across the Bay of Biscay to Portsmouth, and then cycled up to Southampton and Winchester and Reading and back into my village, where my son Billy cycled the last 3 miles with me, and that was quite something. And at the end he just said, "I'm really proud of you, Dad," and it was the loveliest thing he could have said. It's like when your son shows an interest in something like this and says he's proud of you. Oh, well, I found myself choking up, actually. I thought, crikey, it was by far the biggest thing I've ever done. I don't think, Lionel, it's the biggest thing I'll ever do, because these are the golden years and you've got to make the most of them. And I fully intend to do more of these cycle adventures, because I can, and I've got my fitness, my stamina, my health, my interest, and my determination. And as long as I have those things, I fully intend to make the most of it. You know, dear Martin's message is there, reach your potential. You and me, my Baba.
Wonderful. In terms of the mental ups and downs that you go through on a ride like that, there's, for me anyway, whenever I've done even just a long day cycling, you do have some lonely-ish moments, and then some moments when you feel like you can barely feel the pedals and everything's going fine, and then you know you can be on quite an emotional roller coaster on even just a sort of 100-mile bike ride. But if you're crossing the whole of France and Spain, there must have been some ups and downs along the way, not just going up and down the hills, but from a sort of a mental and emotional point of view.
Look, there are highs and lows in every day, aren't there? Every day has its moments, and the bits that you really love and the bits that you go, crikey, I want to get through this. About experiencing them and making something of them. I'll tell you what I did find really surprising was how acts of random kindness happen very easily when I wasn't expecting them. I'll give you an example. I'm cycling through the south of Western France, and I just caught a glimpse of the Pyrenees, and I can see 50 kilometers away the snow on the top of the peaks, and I know I'm going to arrive there tomorrow, and it's like, I've got to cycle up that. And that's one of the big barriers of Europe. And while I was looking at that, I came around the corner and I suddenly saw shutters and purple wisteria cascading over it. And I thought, oh, that looks nice. And what I always do, which is stop and get off the bike, phone out and take a photo or two. Just two photos. It's a 10-second photo opportunity, because I thought, I like the colours there. And these voices behind me said, bonjour, blah, 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 blah. Oh, sorry. Very sorry, I said in my very best English. Your wisteria and your blue shutters. Oh, you're English. Oh, come and have a look. And they'd lived in Oxford, this family. And so they understood a bit of English, and they had loved an English garden, which is, of course, always a joy in springtime. And they had beautiful, gorgeous garden. I'm keen to show it off and give me a cup of tea. And so I said, do you mind if I paint your wisteria? Okay. So I set up my paints and I painted it, and the daughter sat there and read her book, and I put her into the painting. And at 6 o'clock, I said, look, I've got to be going now. I've got to go and find somewhere to stay. And they said, no, we're going to feed you and give you a room for the night. And it's like, what? Hang on. That is remarkable. A 10-second photo opportunity leads to this act of random kindness that probably wouldn't have happened if I had somebody else with me. I would have been hurrying to get on. But I didn't. I just thought, no, I like this moment. And so I stayed in contact with this family, and lo and behold, they came to the book launch in London. They flew over specially for it. And I'm thinking, wow, if I hadn't stopped, I wouldn't have met them, would I? And it's that feeling of turn the different corners, George Michael sang, and we never would have met. You know, sliding doors comes into this. The people you meet, and if you're willing to meet them, then things will happen on a bike. Things will happen on a bike which might not happen if you're walking.
I was going to say,
won't if you're driving.
I was going to say there's something sort of almost uniquely that makes you look almost uniquely vulnerable when you're on a bike. People instinctively feel sorry for you because you've got further to go, or you've come so far, or you can only take what you can carry. And obviously, if you're on your own as well, there is a sort of sense of being laid bare almost, isn't there, when it's just you and your
bike?
Well,
I think it's quite a good thing to be vulnerable. I think. It means that you have only two things that you can rely on: yourself and your bike. And that's it. Yourself and your bike. Okay. So how do you get on with the environment, with other people, and how reliable is your bike? My bike was exceptionally reliable. Okay. Nearly 4,000 kilometers. One puncture. Okay, it was up a mountain in the lashing rain, but only one puncture all that journey. And there was a slight issue a mile into the journey when my chain snapped. Right, okay. That's a mile into the journey and your chain snapped. Right. But yeah, apart from that, exceptionally reliable. And I'm going, yeah, that was a good bike.
Give the bike a name check. What model was it?
A giant bike, Explore 1. It's a touring bike, an Explore 1 and an Explore 2. And it's just the Explore 1's got two cogs and the Explore 2 has got one cog. That's the wrong way around. They didn't number that right, did they? And it comes in small, medium and large size. And I tell you what I really like about it. You turn it on and it's the lights come on, so you're always cycling with lights on. And of course, traffic, when it sees a bike with lights on, will always pay more attention to it. They also pay more attention to you if you've got panniers. Oh, that's a substantial bike. I better give it a wide berth. I better give it a bit more attention.
We also very brightly attired. I mean, you're obviously famous for the colourful outfits.
I don't wear blacks. I wear colour. You'd be disappointed if Mallet turned up and he wasn't wearing colour. So I've got plenty of bright colours on. So you're going to spot me.
And when you think back over the journey and any particular moments where. You were talking about living in the moment, but any of those moments that you've kind of stored away and think back on now and summon up?
Interesting thing happened early on in this ride when it was a cold, grey March day and there were snow flurries and nobody about. And I was thinking, I've bitten off more than I can chew with this. This isn't a very sensible thing to do. And I made a couple of calls and somebody sent me a text and said, break it down. What do you mean? Break it down into between here and the next junction, or here and the next coffee stop, or here and the next bend in the road. And just take each little bit as it comes. And it's such a simple bit of advice, and it's such a good key bit of advice. It's because of that I can remember every bend in the road. Every single bend. If I look at the Strava route for each day, I go, yeah, I remember that. I remember every single bit of it because I had my antennas up. I was looking. Sometimes I'd stop and just do a little Huey. Is that a view to do a little sketch or a photo? What's that? What's going on there? Stop and look at it. Don't go past it because I know I'll never repeat this journey. Well, I'm not certain I'll never repeat it, but I'm fairly confident that that it's probably only going to be once I'll do this. And you'd hate to miss something. So that's how I can remember it all. And that's why it's so rich in my mind. I'm thinking about it now and thinking, yeah, the paintings that I created along the way and thereafter in my studio, that's still growing from the sketches and from the photos. I'm up to 130 or 140 paintings from this adventure now. And I know that there'll be an exhibition of them all in due course. Makes me feel good about them. Makes me feel good that I've recorded this journey and it's been important to me. And I've also lived up to my brother's inspiration.
You can have a look at some of the artwork that you've created from the ride, a wonderful website address you've got, malletspalette.co.uk. that's a blessing in itself, isn't it? But what was it you were looking for when you were cycling? How did you decide where to stop and where to either make a sketch or take a photo or start work on a painting?
Sometimes it was just the mood or the crest of a hill. You know, when you're on a bike, you come around the corner and you see a great view and you consider stopping, but you don't, because if you've got those pedals, what do you call those pedals with the clips in?
Well, they're called clipless because they don't have the toe clips and straps, so you just, a bit like the ski bindings on a set of skis, aren't they? You're clipped in and you have to twist your foot to take your foot off. I don't use those
because I stop too much, actually. I'm stopping all the time. And also with an e-bike, it's not as important about having the up pull on the pedal, because you've got a little bit of assistance from your e-bike, so that's not as important. How do I decide what I'm going to paint? Just wonder. I keep looking, keep glancing, and sometimes glancing behind. Sometimes it's the look behind that gives you the unexpected view. Yeah. I certainly want to do some more of this. I want to do some more exploring. And during lockdown, I've been thinking about it, Lionel. I've been thinking about places I'd like to cycle in the UK. I want to do the Hebridean Way. I really want to do that. Been reading about it. And I'm waiting for Scotland to say, yep, we're opening up all the hotels and you can come. And as soon as they do, I'm going to book myself on my bike on the train up to Oban, and then the 4-hour ferry ride over to Barra, and make my way up through the Hebrides. That's what I want to do. I want to, I'm going off with my bike pals for 3 or 4 days along the Yorkshire coast in September. That'll be interesting. That's different when you go with a group of people.
Do you enjoy that more when you're with other people, or do you feel like it takes away some of your own decision making for you? Maybe that's a positive or not.
Well, I'll plan it. I'll plan it and prep the route, and so I'll be telling them this is where we're going to go. We're going to make this little detour here because I want to see it. And my pals are used to that now, so they're comfortable with it. In fact, one of my mates said he wanted to come out and join me on the Camino for 3 or 4 days cycling, and he was prepared to fly out and rent a car and rent a bike and join me for 3 days. And I said, no, don't do that, because you're asking me to commit to a certain time and place where I'm going to be, and I don't know where I'm going to be in the next half hour.
You only had company at the very start, I gather.
Yeah, I did. I had company there just to make sure that I got to France okay. And that was my good pal, Stevie, who was my Wackaday cameraman, actually. And he and I have been pals for 30 years. And he said, it's a good job I was with you on that first day, because you were all over the place. You know, I guess my mind was worrying because of my brother, who the funeral just 2 days before. And there I was off on this bike ride in the rain.
And you didn't think when your chain snapped a mile in that perhaps something or someone was perhaps offering you a hint?
Yeah, well, it might be, but then, let's see if I can get it fixed. Let's. Life is what happens while you're busy making plans. So don't make too many plans and see what you can make of each day. each day cycling. It's a great thing. Cycling adventures, touring is a really good thing to do. I like having a map because the map will give you a little clue as to where you could go. But I still find myself, oh, I wonder what's down that lane there. I wonder if that could be interesting.
Just lastly, on the logistics of how you, when you got up each day, what was in your mind? Were you looking at physical maps, or did you have it on a GPS unit? What kind of navigation were you using to steer your way through down France and into Spain?
Okay, I used Komoot. I had worldwide access to all their maps, so. With that, you plug in what your start point is and what you think your end point might be, and it will plot a route. And knowing that I'm on a bike and I'd like some off-road, you know, some bits off-road, some on a track, some on tarmac, I'd like a mixture of all of those things. I certainly don't want to be on a busy main road. I want to be on quiet by lanes if I can, and I'm quite happy to cycle bridleways or tracks. Don't particularly want to go on a footpath, and if it's too muddy, right, give me a parallel road, a tarmac route. And then along the way, I know there are certain places I might like to investigate, so I'll add them in, please, and then see how far along that route I will get each day. But each day you have to, when you get to your accommodation, whatever that is, it might be a little albergue, a little hostel, a little B&B of some sort. It varied from being nothing or $10 to €100 a night. So that's the variation. Into Spain, there's lots of albergues that have dormitory accommodation and bunks. And as long as they're not a great big dormitory with 20-odd snoring people, I don't fancy that, thanks. I'm okay with that. I prefer my own room, and I'm quite happy to pay a few extra quid to have my own room. I found I ended up doing between 65 and 75 kilometres a day, which is, 40-odd miles or so. That was a comfortable thing. And I'd start around about the 9 a.m. mark, 9:30 type of thing, and I'd cycle until, 6-ish or something like that. And that seemed to be about right. I'd stop along the way. If I'm stopping to paint, I'd paint for an hour or so, and then carry on. Right. Each day when you arrive in your accommodation, you've got to wash your smalls and hang them out to dry. Okay, there's various bits of housekeeping that need to be done. And then you've got to get somewhere to eat. Eating, you've got to eat well. You've got to eat properly. Now, I'm a pescatarian, vegetarian, so I'm not going to dwell too much on the great beef and sausages that they have across Europe. I think I'd rather have some of their nice seafood, please. They haven't got any. Right, have you got anything vegetarian? Oh. And it might be a little challenging in places. Okay, let's see how we get on with this food.
And just lastly, on the Martin Mallet name tags, you mentioned that you've kind of preserved for posterity the location of each one. Is that available in the public domain for people to check out?
In the book is a map, and the map has each location of each of the Martin Mallet name tags, and in that is a GPS, which, you know, put that into your device. Ping, that'll show you exactly where it is. But easier than copying and pasting the GPS is to use Three Words app. Now, What Three Words is an app which is divided up the entire globe into 3 meter squares, and it uses three words, And I made a note of where each Martin Mount name tag was, and there's the What Three Words code, so you can follow the whole route on the online, or actually on the Strava route, or you know, in person if you were to cycle through it, you'd have your device there. You'd go, ah, Mallet was here.
Wonderful. Well, Timmy, it's been an absolute pleasure listening to you talk about your journey, and well, from all of those people of roughly my age who played Mallet's Mallet with pillows, whacking their brothers or sisters over the head for, you know, I was going to say no good reason, but there was always a good reason, a hesitation.
There's always a good
repetition.
Reason to hit your brother or sister. Always what brothers and sisters are for. That's their job description.
Absolutely. Well, thank you ever so much for those days, but also for spending the time this afternoon talking to me about your cycling journeys.
All the very best, Lionel.
Thanks,
okay.
Bye.
Bye now.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Well, Hannah, I don't know about you, but I found listening to Timmy Mallet talk about his ride really uplifting and upbeat.
Yeah, I think one of the things, I mean, it was so amazing to hear his voice because after so many years of not doing, it's kind of, you think, will it have changed at all, or that character or personality, but it hasn't. It's exactly the same as how you kind of remember it. But one of the things that kind of really struck me was when he was talking about his brother, and he was saying about how the thing that he kind of lived by was always to just being the best you can be. And like on any given day, that's all you can kind of ask of yourself. And I think the thing that kind of really struck for me, I think this year, there's so many things that haven't gone to plan for people, or things that have, so everything's been turned upside down. And I think if you kind of live by that thing of just being the best you can be on any given moment or day, you can't really ask much more from yourself from that. And I really love that kind of sentiment.
Yeah, he was. I found it quite moving when he was talking about just those moments when he's being quite hard on himself and just reminding himself of that, the message that he tries to live by. I mean, a larger than life character, isn't he, Timmy Mallet? I mean, back in the day, he wore the kind of bright coloured glasses and, you know, quite sort of outlandish, bright coloured outfits. And doesn't look like he's toned that down all that much, maybe just a little bit these days. But I just love the fact that his relationship with the bike was clearly such a genuine one. And in some cases, rides an e-bike as well. He did the pilgrimage ride on an e-bike, leaving his little Martin Mallet name tags for people to find. In fact, if you buy the book, which you'll find online, it's called Utterly Brilliant. You order a copy from most booksellers, I'm sure. But he's left his Martin Mallet name tags all across the route down through France and across northern Spain. And in the book, there's a list of the GPS locations and What Three Word links. Now, What Three Word is basically a system whereby three words give you a geographic address. So if you want to follow Timmy Mallet's route at some point, make that your exploration adventure for next year, or maybe the year after, you can have a look and go searching for Martin Mallet name tags. But no, Timmy Mallet, a very keen cyclist, and if you follow him on Instagram or Twitter, you'll often see him posting pictures of his rides out and about, and he often takes his watercolours with him. And also in the book there are some really nice reproductions of his watercolours in the photographic plate section of the paintings that he did on his journey. So quite a moment that for me. I was a little bit nervous talking to him because a big part of my childhood, I guess, watching Mallet's Mallet on morning TV.
I think the thing as well is this idea of him just getting out a painting or starting to paint whilst he's on the route and everything is I find absolutely just amazing that he managed to do that. But also that the thing where he says that for him, the whole point of cycling is stopping, and I was just like, wow, I'd not even ever really thought of it in that sense, of that he just loves the whole point of going on it and being able to stop and take things in. And that was quite a kind of a different concept, isn't it, when you think of going out on a bike? That's not what you always think of. So yeah, and I also like the fact that he said that Mallet definitely wouldn't turn up to a club ride in black.
Very true. That's something that lodged with me as well, that idea of, first of all, a ride with a purpose. And in this case, it kind of a sort of spiritual purpose for him, and obviously kind of carrying his brother's memory with him all the way on the journey. But that idea of stopping being the crucial part of cycling. I know I often joke about the cafe stop or the lunch stop being the really important bit of any bike ride. And while that's true, it has made me think about a project, an explore trip that I might be able to do next year. Simon Gill, the photographer, and I have been talking about a trip which would involve quite a lot of stopping, but more of that in the new year. I'll keep that under wraps for now while we put together the plans.
I can't wait to find out about this one, Lionel.
What will you be doing over the holiday period, Hannah? Are you going to be doing lots of bike riding?
I'm not sure, actually. I'm going to be coming back to the UK to spend time with family. And as I live in Barcelona and it's quite good weather, if it's going to be seriously miserable weather, then I might not do that much, which is a bit of a cop-out. I've become a bit of a fair weather cyclist, but no, it'll be good just to be back at home. And I actually quite often go out cycling with my dad, and it was my dad that got me into cycling, so it's always nice to go out and have a few hours with him on the bike, which will be good.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Can you do the Six Hills or the 12 Hills of Christmas round where you're from?
Not really. Nottinghamshire's relatively flat, isn't it? but no, we'll definitely find some nice routes to go and do. And again, I'm all about being able to go out for a ride, then come back and have a glass of mulled wine and a mince pie. So that's going to be that'll be the best part.
Now you're talking. As I said, my glass of sherry will be waiting for me at the end of my 2 days of the Six Hills of Christmas. Richard and I are actually doing an indoor ride, as is Simon the photographer, on the 20th of December, Sunday the 20th of December. It's if you want to find out more, it's crankedup.co.uk, and it's a 12-hour relay indoors. So all you need is a bike, a turbo trainer and Strava. Go to crankedup.co.uk. This is Richard's idea. He wrote me in, then I wrote Simon in, and I think we're hoping that Tom Wally of Service Course fame will join us. I noticed, Hannah, you didn't respond on our WhatsApp group to the invitation to take part in this.
I think I'm flying back to the UK that day.
How convenient. How convenient. We may rope Lizzie Banks in. She volunteered to do a stint, but I think she doesn't want to do an hour on and then 3 hours off and then an hour on again. So we're thinking if she'd prefer to do 3 hours as a block, that would give us a lovely lunch break, wouldn't it?
Exactly. There's plenty of time to stock up on some mince pies.
Exactly. Well, if you want to check that out, go to crankedup.co.uk. It's something that we'll be doing on the 20th of December. You can ride either 2, 6 or 12 hours on the virtual platform of your choice. And yeah, you might, I'm not quite sure how in detail how it works, but we'll be taking part, and well, we'll update on how we get on, see how many virtual kilometres we cover in 12 hours. Explore will be back in 2021, Hannah. It's been a pretty disrupted year for lots of reasons, hasn't it? Well, one main reason, we haven't managed to get out and explore quite as freely as we had hoped, but fingers crossed next year will be better and brighter.
Yeah, exactly. But I think if one thing that this year and being in lockdown and everything has kind of made us really think about, and that's kind of like our freedom and the thinking about the place and the adventures that we really want to do. And I think in the sense that's been kind of one good thing that's kind of come out of it, is to appreciate those moments more, whether we have them when we have them on the bike.
Excellent. Well, Hannah, we'll catch up again in the new year, hopefully manage to get some time to go for a ride somewhere in the world in 2021 together, maybe try and get some kind of explore ride together, or perhaps you'll join us for a day or two on my yet to be revealed exploration adventure. I don't know, I think Richard's trying to work out whether he'll be able to join us for a few days, but like I say, more of that in the new year. Well, wherever you are in the world, have a lovely holiday season. Enjoy riding your bike, whether indoors or outdoors, and we will all be back together again in 2021. In the meantime, thank you very much, Hannah.
Thank you, Lionel.